Your financial choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org under Public Affairs or on the WDIY app. Today is June 18th, 2025. The markets were flat today with the Dow closing at 42,171, the NASDAQ at 19,546, and the S&P at 5,980. Tonight, we're talking about mid-year tax planning. Mid-year tax planning. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information. And we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with us. Or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy and she'll write it down and they'll bring it into the studio for me. You can also submit questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. Tonight, again, we are talking about mid-year tax planning. And much of what we spoke about last week impacts the tax planning as well. You know, I was talking about birth of a child, changes in jobs, marital status, death, life events, basically. And a lot of tax planning actually is impacted by those same types of events. So let's break down what you need to understand and where some planning opportunities may arise. Though, as a little asterisk here, with any pending tax legislation, some of the next discussion may be subject to change. But we still always have to kind of move forward with planning regardless. And tax planning may be trying to mitigate taxes, but I want to remind people that tax planning may also include taking advantage of low tax rates or tax credits, those types of situations. So it's not just to reduce your tax burden, but it also could be to take advantage of it. And I'll try to explain that as we go through the various topics. So let me start by saying, when we think about income taxes in the United States, it's a pay-as-you-go system. So the IRS is expecting you to pay your income taxes throughout the year, either through withholdings from your wages or from IRAs or from pensions. They expect you to cover the taxes due through withholdings, or if your withholdings are not enough to cover the taxes, or perhaps you have a lot of investment income, there's no tax withholding on that, or perhaps you're self-employed and you have a business and you have profits, or you have rental properties, any other source of income where withholding is not an option and you owe income tax, then you would need to make quarterly estimated taxes. So whatever way you choose, your taxes are expected to be covered. And doing them quarterly is the pay-as-you-go. And those quarterly payments are April 15th, June 15th, October 15th, and January 15th of the next year. And some people don't understand like why or what that makes sense. Well, that gives you an opportunity to make sure you know what, you know, you could look at your income for the year. Perhaps you had a big $1 million gain on December 31st. Well, that gives you a little time to pay the extra taxes that might be due in January if needed. So it gives you a little bit of wiggle room. So quarterly payments are deemed to be made evenly if made timely on those dates. I've had people say, can't I just pay it all at once, or can't I pay it at the end of the year? Well, if you don't pay timely, the IRS will assess penalties and interest for underpayments. But there are something called safe harbor rules, because maybe you don't always know what your taxes are going to be. You have to guess. They're estimated, hence the word estimated. And it may not have been estimated accurately, but there are safe harbor rules to avoid penalties and interest on underpayment if you at least have one of these safe harbor rules, which I'll talk about in a minute. I first want to mention that withholdings are deemed to be made evenly throughout the year. So the withholdings made are deemed evenly throughout the year. So even if you make extra withholdings at the end of the year in November, December, to make up for, you know, income you hadn't realized, and maybe one of you is working and you can increase your withholding through your employer, or maybe you take a required minimum distribution from an IRA in December and you could cover some of the taxes with that, or all of the taxes with that required minimum distribution perhaps. And that is deemed to be made evenly throughout the year because it's withholding, very different than estimated tax payments. So the safe harbor rules are, if you're making estimates and maybe you were off and you owed a lot more money, if you do one of several options for what we call the safe harbor. Number one, if the taxes due are less than $1,000, after you factor in the taxes and the payments in, there's no penalty on underpayment in that scenario if it's under $1,000. If you pay in 90% of the current year, then there's no underpayment penalty for that. 90% of the current year. Or 100% of the prior year is also a safe harbor. So let's pretend in the prior year, your tax, and I'm not talking about the bottom line taxes due, I'm talking about the tax liability from the prior year. So if your 2024 tax return had a tax liability of $20,000, then your safe harbor would be $20,000, even if you owe $1 million. The safe harbor is 100% of the prior year, unless your adjusted gross income was over a certain threshold. So for people who made, we call them high earners, if your income was over, I think it's like $150,000, married, filing joint, $75,000 for single, then your safe harbor isn't 100% of the prior year, it's 110% of the prior year. So if the prior year was $20,000 and you pay in at least $22,000, even if you owed $1 million, you have a safe harbor. You paid in 110% of the prior year. Okay? So it doesn't mean you don't owe the taxes. It just means you don't own penalties and interest on the taxes as long as you pay it by April 15th. So you want to understand the safe harbor rules. So for a mid-year planning review, mid-year tax planning considerations, if you think you are in a situation where you forgot about making estimated payments, you forgot that you have rental income now, you forgot that you have a pension that they're not withholding anything on, you forgot that you got an inheritance, you forgot that you had that huge gain on a sale of investments. This is your chance mid-year to kind of review and see where you are, do a projection of where your taxes are. Do you have a safe harbor? If you have a safe harbor, then you don't need to worry about it right now. But you may have to scramble to get the money to pay the taxes in April. I don't like surprises. I like to kind of anticipate, know what I'm dealing with, and that if we need to raise money, we can do that for the April 15th payment. All right, so safe harbor rules. But my favorite is to cover the taxes when we have withholdings, because you can have the use of your money almost all year and then do the withholdings at the end of the year. This typically works really well when you're in your retirement years and you have required minimum distributions, and you can use that to do the withholding and cover the taxes. All right. And it may or may not be enough. So you have to be careful of that. You have to do your own little projection. Folks, if you have questions, you can call in at 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about mid-year tax planning tonight. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're talking about mid-year tax planning opportunities and considerations. I just mentioned about the safe harbor rules and, you know, making sure you're paying in, cover through either estimated tax payments, those that we call quarterlies, and or federal withholding. All right. And people can make those estimates either using vouchers and writing checks and mailing them in. But you could also go online and set up an account with the IRS and do direct debit out of a bank account as well. So let's talk about some of the other planning opportunities that we might have to manage some of the income tax implications. Something we want to look at, you know, mid-year to make sure we're taking advantage of all of the, you know, available tax benefits that we may have. And as I talked about last week about life events, birth of a child, this could be an opportunity for you to do some updates to your benefits at work if you work, that you may be able to change options that you've selected that otherwise you wouldn't have been able to do until open enrollment. When you have a life event, that's an exception outside of open enrollment. So if you didn't have children and now you have a child and you're going to have to put them in daycare and maybe you want to take advantage of the flexible spending account that your employer may offer, not all employers do, but if your employer offers a flexible spending account for childcare and you know your childcare is going to be, you know, more than $5,000, you could set aside $5,000 through payroll deduction for childcare, and you're saving income tax right up front on that. So that's a nice tax savings. And then you're kind of getting the tax savings up front. Now, you will have to file a Form 2441 with your tax return to show that you used childcare through work, through the flexible spending account. And if it's more than $5,000, up to $6,000 for two children, you can get a little bit of an extra credit. And it's capped at two children as well. So let's pretend you have two children and they're going to give you a benefit up to $6,000, but you used $5,000 already for the flexible care. Then you might be able to get a little bit of a tax break on that additional $1,000. And if you go through software, or go through a tax preparer, and you just enter the child care costs, the children, and the W-2, which would reflect the flexible spending account amount, it should all flow through and give you the proper credit. And that credit for the child tax credit can be, you know, 20% on that extra $1,000. Or if you didn't do the flexible spending account at all, maybe it wasn't available to you, and maybe you have two children in childcare, let's say it cost you $10,000. Well, on the $6,000, you might be eligible for a credit of 20% on that $6,000. That's $1,200. And it can be a little higher than that percentage depending on what your income is. So it's all income driven. If your income is much lower, you get a bigger percentage back. So that is the that is the child care credit, the child dependent care credit. And the reason I also further want to talk about it is if you're not paying attention and you did do a flexible spending account and it is on your W-2, it's indicated in one of the boxes there and it's marked flexible spending account, dependent care. If you don't do the Form 2441, then it could put that money, if it, let's pretend it's the $5,000, it will include it as taxable income. So you lost the benefit of it if you don't fill out the Form 2441. That's the way you have to reconcile the numbers from your W-2 to the child care. All right? So pay attention to that. Don't miss out on that. It may not be obvious to you or, you know, even the preparer. If you forget to tell the preparer you had it and they don't notice it on the W-2 and they don't pay attention to it, you don't want to lose out on that child care credit. So to the point now, if we have a child, let me go backwards a little bit. So you might not have them in child care. You might just have had this baby and decided, you know, you have family who's going to watch them. You still could be eligible for a child tax credit just by having the child. Any child under 17, that is your dependent would qualify for the child tax credit. And this is $2,000 credit against your taxes. It's not a deduction. It's a credit against taxes. So you don't want to miss out on this either. And ordinarily, who misses putting a child on a tax return? Well, I had a friend who did his tax return for his daughter, and he missed one of the kids. So it can happen. So pay attention. Make sure your child is on the tax return. If you have a preparer, make sure you give them the Social Security number, date of birth, etc. And if they're under 17, of course, the $2,000 child tax credit is available for married, filing joint, $400,000 or less, single, $200,000 or less. So it's a really nice tax credit, and it's really available to a lot of people now. They raised that income limit a while ago, and it's really a great tax credit. If your income is lower, it's not a fully refundable tax credit. So remember, you heard me say you can use the tax credit to offset taxes due. But what if you don't have $2,000 of taxes? The child tax credit is up to $1,700 refundable. So not the full $2,000, but at least $1,700 one would get. From my position, if you are someone who would be eligible for this tax credit, but your income is such that your taxes are, you know, below the $2,000 and you wouldn't get the credit for the full $2,000, I would look to see, oh, is there some other way to get some income on your tax return to get the full benefit of that? Maybe you have an IRA. And if we convert, you know, maybe $3,000 or convert $4,000 to a Roth, it puts taxable income on your return, but it could be covered by that extra $300. And you have just converted without really a tax cost to yourself. You're taking advantage of that tax credit. And now it doesn't have to be refundable. It's covering the extra taxes due on a conversion. You're maximizing it. Okay, so that is the child tax credit, the child care or dependent care credit, and the flexible spending account that I mentioned, $5,000. All of those, you know, little nuances come into play when you have a child. And if you have never had a child before, you might not be privy to all of these tax benefits. And knowing them ahead of time in your planning could help you maybe with your cash flow now, or it could help you go tell your employer you had a life event. Hey, can we put money in the flexible spending account if it's available? So mid-year tax planning kind of makes us revisit our own income financial situations to take advantage of some of these credits that would be available to us. Another one more child benefit that could come into play, especially if it's a new event, is a 529, the college savings account, the Section 529 college savings account. If you have a child, you can make a contribution to the 529 account. And if you're a Pennsylvania resident, you can get a deduction on your Pennsylvania return, no matter where the 529 plan is. If you're a New York resident, you have to make the contribution to the New York plan. New Jersey now has a credit or a deduction for it. Virginia, many, many states, Indiana, many, many states have deductions for 529 plans. You have to understand your state of residency and what kind of benefit you have. I would say Pennsylvania is probably the most liberal. And typically, it's you're having to make the contribution to the plan. I have grandparents who make contributions to their grandchildren's plans, and in Pennsylvania, they even get a deduction. All they need to know is the Social Security number and name of the child or the beneficiary. So if you have a grandparent who wants to help and they don't get a deduction in their state, then they could gift the money to you and you could make the contribution and still get the deduction on your tax return. So really be aware of special tax benefits for contributions to 529 education accounts. When we come back from this break, we'll talk about job changes and how you can do some tax planning around that as well. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Public media is facing a critical threat. Efforts to eliminate federally approved funding could jeopardize everything you value about WDIY. For just $1.60 per person each year, federal funding supports the services you rely on, from trusted news to community programming and diverse music. But without that funding, all programming could be at risk. The stakes are higher than ever. Visit protectmypublicmedia.org and urge the Senate to protect WDIY before it's too late.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. We are talking about mid-year tax planning considerations. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, just give your question to Cindy. In looking at mid-year tax planning, another opportunity arises when we have jobs, when we're talking about work. If you do some tax projection, remember I said it's a pay-as-you-go system, and you realize, oh gosh, you know, we got this rental property now, and we're making a profit, or we have or a loss, because the loss could impact your taxes too. You may or may not be able to take advantage of that loss, by the way. I'm going to go off my script here a little bit because I do want to mention that sometimes I'll have clients say, oh, you know, I'm thinking about investing in real estate and rentals and I'll get a loss. And, you know, I have friends who do it and it's really a great thing. It's going to help me with my taxes. Well, your friend might not make as much money as you because the IRS does limit the amount of loss that you can realize in the current year if your income is over a certain threshold, and it's not very high, by the way, and I think it's been this forever and ever. If your income's over $100,000, between $100 and $150,000, there's a phase out of being able to take the loss currently. If your income's $150,000 or more, the loss is suspended. So when I say suspended, it's not that they're not going to let you take it. They're just not going to let you take it when you're making that much money. They suspend it. And each year, it just kind of builds up and rolls forward. It's a carry forward passive loss. We call it a passive loss carryover. And you're not allowed to take that loss until one of a number of things happen. One, your income goes below the income threshold where it would be allowed. So if it's under $100,000, the loss would be allowed up to $25,000. So they even limit that. And then the rest would continue to carry over. Or you have other passive income. So maybe you buy a second rental property and that has income, so they can kind of offset each other a little bit. They're like, you know, investments. Or third, you sell it. When you sell it and have a 100% disposition of the activity, then the passive losses are all freed up if they were suspended. So you have to be really careful when you have rental properties and you're making changes to your ownership during the year of those rental properties, because it could really impact your planning. So quick examples, I've had a couple times where I've had clients who were very high income while they had rental losses that were continuing to accumulate that they couldn't take. Then when they retired, they wanted, or this was their thought, when they retired is when they were going to sell the real estate. And I said, don't do it after you retire. Do it before you retire, when your income is really high. In my story, it was two attorneys. They had very high income. They were going to wait until they retired before they sold them. And I said, sell them so you can free up those passive losses and it can offset your ordinary income of wages. If they had waited until they retired, the year after they retired, they would have had like no income other than investment income. And they would have been, you know, in the lowest of tax brackets when that loss got freed up. I want those losses freed up when you're in a higher tax bracket. So that is a planning technique you have to pay attention to. And, you know, that's why we look at these mid-year considerations. Tell me what's going on. What's happening? When are you thinking of doing this? Keep your accountant informed. I say always be proactive, not reactive. You want to be in front of these decisions because you might not realize that that's the situation. And, you know, I have another situation where someone has lower income, perhaps temporarily. I also don't want those losses freed up in a big way if I expect that in year 3 or 4, their income is going to skyrocket again or go back up again. I want to make sure that we're using those passive losses against higher income, you know, when available. So be aware, rental properties have their own little, you know, corner of the world and tax world. So be careful. All right. So when we talk about other changes in jobs and we look at mid-year tax planning, you might be in a situation where, as I said, your income's going to be higher. You didn't realize it. Maybe you don't have a safe harbor, and you might need to make an adjustment to your withholdings. Or you had a life event here as well where maybe you're married now, and so your income has changed, and you're a dual income household, and the income's really high. You might need to review your W-4. That's the form you fill out when you start employment, and you let them know your marital status and how they should do withholding. There is a box on the W-4. It's box 2C, and you want to check that if you're both working. And when you complete the W-4, each should check that box. That helps with the withholdings a little bit. It may or may not still be enough. Just because the employer is withholding based on that W-4, they don't know what other income you have on your return. Sometimes I've had people say, well, my employer already withheld my tax. Well, your employer withheld your tax based on the income of you, just you, not your spouse, not your investment income, not your rental income, not your pension income, not your Social Security income. They're only looking at your wages. They have no idea what your other income is. And it may or may not be enough, or it may be too much. So that's why it's important to review and do planning. Another tax-saving strategy you could use if you're now dual income and your income's higher, maybe you have plenty of cash flow, that you've got your emergency reserve, you have plenty of cash flow, you're looking to save some taxes, maybe you're in a higher tax bracket, you can increase your contributions to an employer-provided retirement plan. You save taxes today. Now, you will pay taxes in the future. The concept then is in the future when you retire, maybe you're not going to have as much income and you'll be in a lower tax bracket then. So you save taxes today, the concept of deferral. So you can increase your 401k contributions. Sometimes I think people think you can only do it during open enrollment. And, you know, I haven't seen that for years. Typically what we see now is employer plans provide online access to their employees to be able to view their retirement accounts, to make investment options, investment changes on their retirement accounts. And quite often you can change your deferral election through the employer-provided website for your retirement plan. So don't think you're always locked in to the open enrollment. So you can usually change your retirement account. That's a little bit different than some of the other enrollment, you know, elections like HSA or the FSA I mentioned earlier. But again, life events can change those too. You can change outside of open enrollment if you have a life event. So you can increase your withholdings. You can increase your contributions to your 401k or 403b typically any time during the year. Now, remember, that's going to lower your cash flow, too. You are going to save taxes today. Let's pretend you defer $10,000 more, but you might only see your paycheck change $7,500 because you're having the tax savings now, too. So it's not going to be a dollar-for-dollar difference. Or maybe you don't need to save income tax, but you could still defer into a Roth 401k. I'll talk more about that when we come back from this mid-show break, and we are doing mid-year tax planning considerations. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. The show's going really fast for me. I hope it's striking a chord with some of our listeners and they think about doing some mid-year tax planning. I just mentioned a few ideas, a few options, and I did talk about increasing contributions to a 401k. If you do it on a pre-tax basis, it lowers your taxable income today. There could be a number of other tax advantages for that. So I had said it could lower your income tax today on that deferral. You'll pay it in the future. But what might else it do? And this is why we talk about tax planning. If I lower the income on the tax return, that could free up some of those other credits we talked about. So I only mentioned, you know, the child care credit, the child tax credit. Perhaps you're someone who your income's high. Maybe it's, you know, over $400,000 married filing joint. Lucky you. And you wouldn't qualify for the child tax credit, perhaps. Well, if you aren't doing your full contribution to the 401k and you can afford to do so in cash flow, lower your taxable income on page one, and all of a sudden you're eligible for those tax credits. So these are the kinds of things you have to pay attention to. I always talk about the elements of your financial life and how you make a decision in one area of your financial life and it impacts another area. You know, this affects cash flow, it affects taxes, it affects, you know, your retirement planning, and it could free up money available to you that you otherwise might not have had an opportunity to have for things like the child tax credit. It might also be one of those situations, and I'm going to talk about filing status in a minute, but you could be in a situation where you have one spouse who's working still and one spouse who's retired, and maybe the spouse who's retired is 65 and they're on Medicare. Maybe they're not on your health care plan, and your Medicare premiums might be impacted by how much income's on your tax return. So when we do our mid-year tax review and we say, oh, shoot, that's right, you know, George is on Medicare now, and I thought it was going to be cheaper for him to be on Medicare than on my health plan, and now I'm finding out my income's so high, we're going to pay, you know, a premium for our Medicare. Well, maybe if you did a 401k contribution or upped your 401k contribution, maybe you could lower your income and, you know, lower that premium. There are certain income, by the way, I'm going all over the place now. With the Medicare, it gets really tricky because it's not just page one income, it's also tax-exempt income. So you have to be careful of that. It might not be as obvious. So be aware of some of the other income that affects that. So I want to go back to the retirement plan options for a minute, mid-year tax planning. You could get a tax benefit, as I said, by increasing your contributions to the 401k if that's available. You could get a match, an employer match. You don't want to miss out on an employer match, so be aware of that. But I also said tax planning could be not just about saving taxes, but it could also be about taking advantage of low taxes. So let's pretend you are someone who, you know, you started the new job, you're kind of fresh out of college and you're making, you know, $60,000 a year and dad helped you fill out the, you know, the elections for your 401k and dad just goes back to like when he worked and it was all pre-tax and he just has you click the button for pre-tax. Well, you could have really great earning potential in the course of your long career history. And maybe at age 24, you're the youngest you're going to be and the lowest pay you're going to be because you hope to make a lot more money in the future. This could be your lowest tax brackets. So maybe instead of doing the pre-tax contribution to the retirement accounts, you choose to do Roth contributions. And your employer may offer a Roth 401k option. I love that that's available and that allows you to put in a lot of money. If you're under age 50, it's like $23,500, I think, for 2025. But I would say if your income is below a threshold that, which in this story, it would be, if your income is below as a single person under $146,000, 2024 numbers, you could put money in an individual Roth IRA. So you could put $7,000 into a Roth IRA outside of work, and then you could still put money into the Roth through work. You could do both. They're considered different kinds of plans. The individual Roth is not considered a qualified plan. The Roth 401k is considered a qualified plan. They're considered different plans, and you can do both as long as you're within, you know, certain income limits. So tax planning can go both ways, either saving taxes, reducing your taxes, or maybe taking advantage of low taxes today that will save you taxes in the future. Because what happens with the money we put into the Roth, it grows income tax free, and you can always get out your original contributions. That is the biggest benefit, if you ask me. Not the biggest benefit, the biggest incentive to young people. You can always get your money back out, but growing income tax-free is really, really powerful. All right, I had mentioned tax filing status. This is another area that has a lot of, you know, tax pitfalls or tax planning opportunities. And where might we have a tax filing status change? You might have a tax filing status change when you go from single to being married, where you go from married to possibly, you know, surviving widow, a qualifying widow, or you're going to be married filing joint if you lose a spouse during the year, and then the next year you're going to be single. So it really opens the door for planning this year because you're that married filing joint status. And sadly, if you lost a spouse during the year, you might have lost a big chunk of income and you may need more income. And where might you get it? Well, if you're of age, you could always take money out of IRAs in that year and still get the benefit of the married filing joint tax status when the income might have gone down because of this event. And sometimes you have a longer window to do that planning. If you lose a spouse, sadly, at the end of the year, you don't have as much planning. But if you've lost a spouse mid-year, you can do some little extra planning around that as well. And, you know, I'm sure your spouse, though they're gone, would be happy that you're taking charge of your financial life and making sure that you're taking care of yourself. A tax filing status change that really hits hard, though, is married filing separate. When you are filing married filing separate, there's a whole boatload of different rules and limitations. You can't do, I think the Roth, you can't have more than like $10,000 of income. So you get half the capital loss allowed. There's a number of things that happen with married filing status status. The IRS doesn't like you guys. And sometimes you can't even help it. Sometimes you're going through a divorce and it is what it is. And you don't want to file with your spouse. You're not divorced by the end of the year, but you just can't file joint for whatever reason. And you decide to do married filing separate. May or may not be a big deal. make sure you do planning around it. But here's where I see an issue. I have seen and have had couples that say, well, married filing separate, the taxes are lower. This is very rare, by the way. It's very rare that married filing separate taxes would be lower than married filing joint. But we did have this scenario once where a couple said, oh, our taxes are going to be lower married filing separate. And that was all well and good. But guess what we found out? Married filing separate impacted their Medicare premium. So you've heard me talk before about the income-related monthly adjustment amount, IRMA. For people who are on Medicare, who are 65 or older, they have Medicare Part B. Their Medicare Part B premium has a standard rate. And if your income goes over a certain threshold, looking back 2 years on your tax return, they can charge you a premium. And that premium skyrockets for married filing separate status. Skyrockets. So be very, very cautious of that. So look at the tax planning. Now, here again, this could be a scenario I mentioned earlier. If you have one spouse who's working, one spouse who's on Medicare, you want to watch that, because if you can mitigate the IRMA adjustment on the Medicare premium, you want to watch out for that. You also want to think about that before your non-working spouse, your retired spouse, goes on Medicare, because it really truly may be cheaper for them to go on your employer-provided plan, where you may have already been insured through your employer plan and your spouse may have been insured through their employer plan. And then when they retired, they go on Medicare and you didn't realize, oh, you're making a lot of money and you have to pay a higher Medicare premium because of that. Maybe it would have been cheaper to stay on the still working spouse's healthcare. In that scenario, you have to let Medicare know that you have other qualified coverage. And once your spouse retires and you're going to go off the insurance, you have to let Medicare know as soon as you can, if not 2 to 3 months before you officially go on Medicare. Now, going on Medicare Part A, which is the hospital insurance, that doesn't have any impact because we don't pay for Medicare Part A once we, you know, are of age of 65, because we've paid for that while we're working. When you look on your pay stub and you see Medicare tax, you're basically paying for your health hospital insurance, Part A. It's Part B, which is the medical, like doctors and things like that, that we pay a monthly premium for. And that monthly premium can be adjusted via the IRMA adjustment based on your income. And they look back 2 years. And this isn't necessarily tax related, but your tax return definitely impacts this. That again, life event, if you have a life event and you stop working and your income comes down, I told you the IRS looks back 2 years. So let's pretend for 2025, they looked at your 2023 tax return, and in 2025, you're retired. And in 2023, you were making $500,000. The Medicare premium is going to be based on that 2023 income unless you let them know. And there's a form called SSA-44. I can't believe how many people are not aware of this. You fill out the SSA-44 and you let the Social Security office know, hey, I had a life event. I had either a reduction in work or I had a stoppage in work. My income's down for 2025. I expect it to be $120,000. Oh, yay. It's under the threshold. No adjustment on my Medicare premium. And if they were charging you 2 times standard, 1.4 times standard, whatever it might be, they can adjust that back. And they typically will refund you the additional amount that you paid when you complete that form, if they already were charging you the higher amount. So tax filing status can impact a few things, and they need your tax return information for that. So that also could be, even though it's not necessarily income tax savings, it is still savings based on your income tax return. And it demonstrates and shows you that paying attention to the income on your return can make a difference, not just in income tax, but correlated items such as the Medicare premiums as well. And I did write down the amount for married filing separate for 2025. I think it said if your income's greater than $106,000 and less than $394,000, the IRMA amount is $406.90. So that's the married filing separate rate. Very, very high. And I think the normal rate's like 181. So, and it also applies to Part D too. So watch out for change in filing status and do some planning. And if you can have planning done, if you've lost a spouse or, you know, think you're going to be single the next year and you're married filing joint this year, what planning can you do this year? Folks, we are at the last break. The show's gone very, very fast for me. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also on the WDIY app. And you can listen on many streaming services as well. We are talking about mid-year tax planning opportunities. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So let's talk about some financial implications of financial decisions you make that hit you on your tax return. I really stress and want people to understand how their various kinds of investments are taxed on their return. When you think about investing and you have all your money in CDs or money market accounts, bank accounts, it's interest income. Interest income is taxed as ordinary income, just like wages, rental income, pension income, Social Security income. These all get taxed at ordinary income tax rates, depending on what tax bracket you're in, how much income you have on your return. Then there is income that gets taxed more favorably, and that is qualified dividends, which are from equities, and capital gains, long-term capital gains, that come from the sale of your equities that you've held longer than 1 year. And you might have other kinds of long-term gains. You might have real estate that you sold long-term gains, buildings of rental property. So the rental income itself would be ordinary income, but the sale or the gain on the sale of a rental property could be a long-term capital gains. Okay. So you have to understand the different kinds of tax consequences you have. So when you look at your tax return and you say, what does it look like for the year? I'm doing some mid-year planning. And holy smokes, I've always been a nervous investor. I like to keep my money close and I like to have it in the bank. And you realize that $11,000 on the tax return is going to cost you, $2,200, $2,400, $2,500. The return you're getting on that CD interest or that money market interest gets cut a little bit because of the taxes. So we talk about the after-tax rate of return on that. Now, if we looked at qualified dividends are taxed at a lower tax rate. It could be zero. So if you are in a 12% tax bracket, your qualified dividends are taxed at zero. If you're in a 12% tax bracket with your interest income, it is 12%. That's the difference. So $10,000 of interest income in a 12% tax bracket is going to cost you $1,200. And $10,000 of dividends in a 12% tax bracket is going to cost you zero. So you really need to understand what kind of income you have on the return and where might you be able to take advantage of of the tax rates. Not to mention that when we have CDs or money markets, and let's pretend we're earning, you know, 4% or 5%, people have told me they've been able to get, which I haven't seen in a while, then it's 5% on, you know, $100,000 is $5,000. Now, that same $100,000 invested in equities, and I'm not suggesting one run out and do this, I just want you to be aware that $100,000 in equities may not push off $5,000 of income. Because remember, when we're looking at equities, we're looking at total return. We're looking at not just the return of the dividend, we're also looking at the growth or the gain on the investment itself. So when I invest $100,000, yeah, maybe I might want a dividend, although I could invest in such a way that it might be an investment that doesn't throw off a dividend, might use ETFs and that kind of thing. So you might not have to have the same kind of income on the return. I might be going for growth, and then that growth is only going to be taxable when I sell it. Okay, so that's another way to control the income on your tax return. Number one, the dividends might not be throwing off as much income as the bank interest, but you're going for total return on the equities. And then that has that more favorable tax rate. So zero tax rate on qualified dividends and long-term capital gains to the extent you're in a 12% tax bracket, 15% on qualified dividends and long-term capital gains, to the tune of about, I think up to like, oh, it's like $400,000+ for married filing joint. So there's a lot of room there before the capital gains tax rate or qualified dividend tax rate goes up to 20%. It's typically 0 or 15. Really, for the highest income earners, it can go to 20. But to the extent you're in the lower brackets, it's not like one or the other. So let's pretend you're someone who makes, and I'm just going to pretend the threshold is 450. I don't know what it is off the top of my head. Let's pretend it's 450 and you have 460,000 of page one income. Well, if you have $100,000 of qualified dividends, 10 might get taxed at 20, and then the other 90 is going to get taxed at 15%. Now, there is something called the net investment income tax that is 3.8% that does apply to our investment income when it exceeds certain income levels, which married filing joint, it's over $250,000, and single, it's over $200,000. So we might be subject to that extra net investment income tax. But guess what? You'd be subject to the net investment income tax on the interest income, too. So if your interest income is getting taxed at 22%, you're subject to the net investment income tax. You also have another 3.8 on that. Whereas if it's dividend income and you're at 15%, it's different. So what did I say? 22 and 3.8 is like 25%. Whereas the dividend would be 15 plus 3.8. You're at 18. It's quite different. So just be aware of that. It could make a big difference in your tax projections, your taxable income. And, you know, I've been seeing a lot of people go into, you know, treasury bills. People get nervous. They get conservative. They're worried about things. And, you know, that has interest income as well. Those T-bills, when they become due, lots of interest income. In that scenario, though, they're not subject to state income tax. So remember, when we have U.S. obligations, direct U.S. obligations, they are not taxable at the state level. And that's, you know, any state. Be aware for tax planning, mid-year tax planning, review your investment accounts. Maybe there's things you need to trim. Maybe you need to rebalance. There might be positions where you could take a loss. We call that tax loss harvesting. You realize a loss and you might be able to use that against other gains that you have later in the year. Or if you don't have other gains, then you can use up to $3,000 against ordinary income. That's my favorite. I love being able to use the $3,000 loss against ordinary income. Now, what if you have a $10,000 realized loss? That's fine too. The IRS, though, tells you we can only use $3,000 against ordinary income and the rest will carry over indefinitely into future years until you use it. And you can use it against other future gains or, again, against the $3,000 of ordinary income. All right, so be aware of that. I'm trying to get in the last few items. I wanted to make sure. I have 5 minutes left. I already talked about 529s, tax benefits for that. I also want to remind people that if you take a distribution from a 529, as long as it's used for qualified education expenses, no taxes on the growth or earnings, but you have to make sure you match up the distributions in the same year as the expenses. They have to match. So if you put, you know, $20,000 toward tuition in, you know, August, and you don't remember until the next January, you say, oh, you know, I have to reimburse myself the $20,000. It was a qualified education expense in, you know, last year. I'm going to reimburse myself. It has to be in the same year. You want those to match. And it can be for housing, room and board as well. There is something called the American Opportunity Tax Credit. I like people to make sure they coordinate the education benefits and the education credits if they're available to you, that don't lose out on the $2,500 American Opportunity Tax Credit that could be available to you, you know, simply by paying $4,000 for tuition out of pocket. Even if you have a 529, you'll want to coordinate those benefits to take advantage of the tax credits for education. There's also a lifetime learning credit. Rollovers, if you do a rollover and you, whoops, you forgot, you got a check and you forgot, oops, you know, I didn't mean to take this distribution. I didn't mean to take this out of my retirement account. I retired. They sent the check to me. I didn't know what to do with it. You have 60 days to roll it over into an IRA, so don't miss out on that. Be aware of that. There is that 60-day window. If you are 70 and a half or older, you can make contributions to nonprofits out of your IRAs. It doesn't work with 401ks or 403bs, but out of your IRAs, you can, and it would be the taxable IRA, not the Roth IRA. You can do something called the qualified charitable distribution, where the check goes directly to the charity. It's not that you take a distribution, put it in your bank account, and write a check. No, no, no. You need the custodian to write the check directly to the nonprofit, and then you don't pay tax on it. Now, the required minimum distribution age is now 73. So here's tax planning opportunity. Like if you're taking notes, like in school, tax planning opportunity. If you're 70 and a half and you say, oh, yeah, I could do this. Well, and if you're going to do it anyway, you could use your IRA for that. But I almost would say, hey, if at 73 you have a required minimum distribution, could you kind of wait and hold off on making those big charitable contributions and just do it in the year you turn 73 when you have your required minimum distribution? So I had a client once, a required minimum distribution, I think, was $25,000. She had made a pledge to the church, $6,000 a year for 3 years. That's $18,000. I said, hey, just let them know you're going to do it in year three. I think she was already in year two, but she had not done it yet. And I said, let's wait till year three. We did the 3 years worth of pledge all in 1 year, the year she had her required minimum distribution, and we saved taxes on that amount of money. Good planning. Donor advised funds, also always a great avenue for mid-year tax planning. If you're charitably inclined, you're someone who has, you know, maybe highly appreciated securities, you need to trim some of them, you can make a contribution of appreciated long-term securities to a donor advised fund and may or may not get an income tax deduction for it. It depends on where you are with Schedule A itemizing deductions. But when we bunch several years of giving into 1 year, chances are what we're trying to get is a higher deduction on your Schedule A, so you can get some benefit from the contribution. You also get the benefit when donating highly appreciated securities that you don't have to sell them and pay tax on them. So if you have something that's really highly appreciated and you want to trim it, maybe you don't want to take the tax hit, but you're charitably inclined, well, you can fund a donor advised fund. So these are the kinds of things you can think about and get creative with when you're ahead of them enough. You're not doing it at, you know, when you bring in your tax stuff in February and you find out you owe $10,000 and you say, hey, Lori, what can we do to save some taxes? Well, you should have talked to me 6 months ago. So you want to be very proactive in understanding your tax situation, your tax opportunities, what might be available to you. You know, I took some time to talk to a client about doing qualified charitable distributions out of the IRA. She really wasn't benefiting from her charitable giving in itemizing. And guess what happened? When we started doing the qualified charitable distributions out of her IRA, It lowered her income. She stopped paying the Irma premium. So she saved income taxes on the charitable giving. She saved income taxes, Medicare premiums. I mean, it was just like win, win, win to the tune of about $4,000 a year, because she also had more qualified dividends that qualified for a lower tax rate than the interest income that she had had previously. So fun little things you can do, and why not if you can? Folks, I hope this was helpful to some of you. You can always send messages through yourfinancialchoices.com as well. I would love to know if this is helpful to people. I don't have to disclose anyone's name. It's just really nice to get feedback from time to time. And if you have show ideas, topic ideas, I've been doing this for a very long time, and I would love some fresh ideas from our listeners to talk about things that are of interest to you. So you can certainly send those through yourfinancialchoices.com as well. Thanks, Bob and Cindy, for being here. Welcome back. Thank you, James, for being here. Coming up, next week, I'm going to do retirement planning options, talking about pensions and rollovers and things like that. Remember, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.